Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're concerned about mental health or looking to get into self-improvement, join me at the Piece by Piece podcast. There, I'm interviewing everyday people and experts alike about how to overcome difficulties around mental health. Speaking of which, I just released an interview with a mental health historian and another with two friends who are healthcare workers.
If these conversations interest you, check us out at Piece by Piece. That's Piece with an A, B-I, and then Piece with an I. Thank you so much.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home. They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
Well, you can laugh. I'm the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist. But having said that, I want to be like me.
There's been a somewhat unfortunate trend in the early stages of this season's Premier League to compare every other forward unfavourably with Erling Haaland, and Liverpool's Darwin Nunez in particular has been a victim of these comparisons. So we should really start today's Second Captain's Football Podcast by celebrating the eye-catching performance of the Liverpool front man off the bench in yesterday's 1-0 win against Man City. He may not have scored any goals. He may have butchered a 3-on-1. He may even have chipped a shot sideways at one stage. But he did manage to steal the show for the last 20 minutes while up at the other end. What was Haaland doing? The square root of fuck all, Ken. How are you?
Very well, Owen.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Nunez. So very watchable. I'll give him that.
My God.
I really did enjoy it. So much went on yesterday, and yet just Nunez alone was worth the admission fee.
He's showing us things we've never seen before. You know, who has ever seen a chip like that? You know, it's not at that level.
Well, at least with the chip. No, the chip probably wasn't the right option. I was going to say, at least shooting in that case was the right option.
Just have a go. Just you know, Fergie. Oh, just hit it as hard as you can, son.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I just love the ones where he had people overlapping, some extremely capable players ready to tap goals in. And no, I'll just take the wrong option every
But it's day. So obvious what he just needed to do. Like, I mean, he had two players. It was so clear what you need to do. And it just beats me how anyone could not.
But it's like he had the blinkers on. This is the 3-on-1 we're talking about, yeah. Because there was a later one where he just had to knock it back to, who was it?
Carvalho.
Literally just square back and to go. But he played a pass across to Trent Alexander-Arnold. But yeah, the big one was probably that 3-on-1 where he just head down, boom, run straight towards goal.
But even if you're going to run, like run with a bit of conviction. If you've decided that you are going to take this, it's a 3-on-1, but you're going to play it as a 1-on-1, you against the defender, then at least attack the defender as though you mean to beat him, as opposed to sort of, you know, he it was like there was, oh no, it was like, I have options here, and that jammed his brain, you know, like the mechanism of his brain just jammed. But like it's so simple. He had, I think it was a Jota and Salah. Salah's the obvious pass. Salah is completely free. All he needs to do is pass him the ball. Salah's going to have a shot, another 1-on-1 against Ederson, and it's probably going to be a goal. And it's a simple pass. There's one problem. There's one defender there, and maybe he's going to block the ball. But you've got Jota. And this is why this is such an easy situation. Because all Darwin Nunez needs to do is stop running. The defender will have to keep running. The defender will keep running because he's running anyway. Jota will run, and the defender kind of has to think about him as well. And this is going to create the space that you need to pass the easy sideways ball to Salah, who can now apply the finishing killing touch to the game and turn 1-0 into 2-0 in the 92nd minute or whatever it was at that stage. And it was just like, how he failed to see that was what he had to do is worrying on. I'm not going to lie. But as you say, you know, at the other end of the pitch, there wasn't a whole lot happening there.
Well, he can't do it against the big teams, can he?
Well, it turns out, no. You know, he's now 2-0 down to Darwin Nunez in their confrontations this season.
Well, except Darwin Nunez.
And one goal.
Oh, yeah. He did score. You're talking about, no, yesterday.
He didn't score yesterday. Yeah. He only played, 20 minutes. Yeah. He scored in the Community Shield. So, again, as a substitute. So, you know, it's Haaland, 180 minutes, no goals. Nunez, 50 minutes, one goal. And so many moments that will echo in eternity.
The good news being you don't have to wait too long to see Darwin Nunez back in action. There's a full round of fixtures during the week, including Liverpool against West Ham on Wednesday night. We'll bring you all the best coverage during the week on the World Service. And Roddy Collins and Paul Howard are making their way into Second Captain Studios this evening to record a chat about their brilliant new book, The Rodfather, in front of a select group of World Service members. It's going to be great.
I bought 22 chalk oysters.
Oh, well, that's bang on, because it's around about that number of members who are going to be... I think you're already smiling at Roddy Collins' hotkeys, Ken. There's going to be a lot of Roddy tonight. And some Paul Howard as well. A very happy Liverpool fan, Paul Howard, I'm sure. Might want to crow about that.
Liverpool Football Club, I think Paul Howard would say.
He would just say that. To become a member yourself for only €5 a month plus VAT, just get on secondcaptains.com. That only takes a couple of minutes. Jonathan Wilson, I should say, in studio today. Jonathan is in town for a bit of book promotion and he's going to make his way into our studios after, Ken, your report on sport.
Yeah, so it really was a very, very enjoyable game to watch yesterday. Partly, I have to give the referee credit. You know, it's like, would greyhound racing be more entertaining? And I know people think it's a barbaric sport anyway. Some people think it's a barbaric sport. But say if they, you remember Chief Wiggum? Mm. Yeah, we've been starving them, beating them, singing off key. If you just did that to the dogs before every race... would that improve the spectacle? I mean, the game was a little bit like that, I felt. Like, if the referee just took the maximally annoying approach to the game just by, like, overlooking blatant fouls and then, like, you know, when the VAR thing happened, coming back to do this and, like, absolutely causing Guardiola to lose his mind.
And Klopp.
And Klopp, of course, as well. But I think the Guardiola moment was really the key moment of the game. That the game was different after that moment. This was Guardiola's, specifically him turning around to rant and rave at the crowd and wave as though he's trying to G up the crowd.
That moment was just, you just knew that was not going to end well for Pep.
It just seemed like, what are you doing? This is the opposite of what you're meant to do. You know, this is not what you want. You know, you do not want to turn this into
a pantomime, basically.
Oh, that's not it. Like, that's not it. They've got more fans than you in this building. A lot more.
This is Anfield in your own words, Pep.
This is that you want your team to be cool, to be composed, to use their superior, you know, passing, their superior organization, the quality that they have to win this game. You do not want to turn it into a slugfest end to end. And you do not want to rile up the crowd. It just was a crazy thing for him to do. And how can a guy like that complain when his players lose the head? His players who are actually running around, you know, at like 90 miles an hour, sweating and blood like pounding in their heads. How are they supposed to keep their composure when they look over and Guardiola is doing some kind of, like, I mean, what is he doing to the crowd? It just was, it was mad. It was really mad, and I feel like
now it is the kind of stuff that Diego Simeone does it, and it's like, oh, look at Simeone communing with the crowd and all this.
Yeah, does Diego Simeone do that to
maybe not with opposing
supporters?
Fans? Yeah,
he tries to get his own supporters riled up and stoked up. Of course, he does that, but it's just what Guardiola's doing. I can't remember seeing it. Who does that? Like, what was he thinking? Could you imagine, like,
Jose Mourinho
doing that?
Sliding down the touchline, all that kind of stuff. Jose Mourinho antagonizes opposing crowds.
When Jose Mourinho was sliding down the touchline or running down the touchline at Old Trafford or busting his pants that time after they Real Madrid beat Man City by his knee slide, or running onto the pitch at, at the New Camp. What do all these things have in common? He's celebrating a moment of victory. He's rubbing the nose of the stadium in it. There's nothing they can do at that point. You know, or running down at Anfield to celebrate in front of the Chelsea fans. Remember when they denied them the league in 2014? He picks his moments. He doesn't do it when it's nil-nil, and they're all laughing at him because he's the one who's losing his cool, and he hasn't got anything on them. I mean, he's actually just had a setback in terms of the goal has just been disallowed, and so he's angry, losing his composure, and then turning to sort of say, "Oh, come on, I'll take all of you," to the crowd, and everyone is A, laughing, but B, is redoubling the intensity of their efforts to kind of scream. You know, it was madness.
Do you think that moment, more than anything that Liverpool did, how well Salah played, how well set up they were tactically, that moment is what actually won Liverpool the game?
No, I mean, there was so much more going into it, but I feel that was really a key moment in deciding where that game went and how it ended, and the sort of the tenor of the of everything after that game, after that moment, seemed to me to be different. And for Liverpool, things were starting to come together at that point, because they had started pretty well. Like, you know, there was a run from Salah very early in the game, which immediately suggested, I'm going to be in this game today. And this is not going to be one of those games that I've had this season where it's like, where is he? Has Mo Salah strapped his wages to his body? Or is he wearing them? Is he wearing them under that shirt? Like, what's going on here? It wasn't going to be like that. He looked, you know, strong, direct. He's like, I'm going to go at these defenders. I think I can beat them. And mainly what was happening at the back was Milner playing really, really well against Foden. And this was the decision that Guardiola had made. Guardiola said, I'm going to use Foden there because I saw him murder James Milner, who's somehow still alive. Well, Phil Foden murdered James Milner in full view of 55,000 people at the stadium last season. And I want to see him do it again. And so he put Foden there. That meant he took Grealish out, because that's Grealish's position when he plays. And it also meant that Foden and De Bruyne weren't there on the right, which has been this brilliant combination that City have had all season, or in most of their games this season. Foden to De Bruyne. Foden's brilliant. One of his many exceptional abilities is to hold the ball under pressure and release it with great timing. And that creates these little spaces for De Bruyne to hammer in these crosses, which Haaland then just does whatever. Just blasts into the net using whatever. Leaps into the air, flips over, does a somersault, volleys it in, whatever. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of it. And he decided to go with the more direct, let's just have Foden murder Milner again. And I do wonder if that worked for City. And Cancelo was then on the other side as well. And it seemed like quite a lot of changes had gone into the team, which maybe, looking back, did he need to do it? But obviously he wants to sort of surprise. He always wants to surprise the opponent a little bit.
Credit to James Milner for recovering from that horror show last season, putting in a performance.
Well, Milner is now nearly a year older than Gary Neville was when he had his career-ending nightmare against West Brom, which was on New Year's Day 2011. And Gary Neville came off the pitch after being run ragged by West Brom and realised that he couldn't do it anymore. He was done as a Premier League footballer. And Gary Neville that day was playing against Chris Brunt and Jerome Thomas and Peter Onwenge. He wasn't playing against Phil Foden and Erling Haaland. So I was expecting this to be a real mess for Milner. I'm sure I wasn't the only one. Klopp even referred to it after the game. You know, I'm sure everyone saw that matchup and thought, oof, he played brilliantly. So how many more times he's going to be able to do that, who knows? But at least he'll always have that. Gomez as well. I mean, Gomez, this is just like a few weeks ago, gave one of the worst defensive performances you ever see against Napoli. He's playing against he's playing this game against City and just absolutely incredible. So, you know, they were already sort of switched on. Obviously, I checked Diego Torres, and he suggests he said they defended the spaces as though contracts were being decided in each individual duel, which in fact they were, because if you look at the table, they're so far off the Champions League now that things are looking a bit dicey in terms of the club's long-term economy. You know, I mean, long-term, one season out of the Champions League, but it would be a massive blow to their, you know, high-wage low transfer spend, but very high wage bill. Thing, you know, if you suddenly lose like 100 million or 120 million or whatever you're getting in the Champions League these days, that's a big problem for them. So as though they were playing for that, I keep just coming back to Pep being the grit and the oyster. Like, you know, why give them that? Why, you know?
Well, he lost his head. It's not like he made a conscious decision to whip up. I'm going to whip up the crowd now. This will be a good idea. He just lost it.
Yeah, you'd have to ask how many trophies would these guys have won if it wasn't for Pep. You know, how many trophies would a manager who can keep his composure have actually won? Mm. Would he have won all those league titles? Probably not. I think probably...
Fairly relentless. Given how good Liverpool were in that period, yeah. I think Liverpool might have a couple of other Premier League titles to their name.
This is the thing. You know, City are always going to be one of the strongest teams in the Premier League. And this goes back to the stuff that Klopp was saying before the game, which obviously was on Friday and caused a big storm over the weekend. And, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit with Jonathan in terms of how that fed into the occasion, because I believe that it did. Whether it was part of some, you know, I'm going to do this and that's going to cause them to lose their heads in a way that will suit us, or whether he was just moaning, you know, like Klopp sort of under the kind of pressure he seldom has been, team playing badly, season kind of has gone off the rails. And now he's kind of complaining about stuff that previously he would have been spending that time talking about how great Mo Salah was playing. But have you seen how well Sadio Mane is playing as well? Yeah. Whereas now he doesn't have that. And now it's like, well, you know, have you seen these guys? They're kind of, you know, it's a bit unfair what they're doing. So, that was what Klopp was saying. And for that reason, I mean, I think I happen to think Klopp was basically right. And I think most people, you know, people who aren't Man City fans will generally think that as well, you know. You know, they have Haaland in the team. He's incredible. He's getting €1 million a week. You know, there wasn't anyone else in that auction. Like, the only other team that could have been in the auction, I mean, Real Madrid tried to get him, but they were like, well, we can't do that. We can't afford that, because we're, you know, we're only Real Madrid. We're not like we're not the United Arab Emirates or Qatar. The only other team that could have done it is PSG. Well, Newcastle maybe, but he's not going to go to Newcastle at this point, right? Haaland isn't, I mean. And PSG, the only reason they don't really go for him is because they've already got Messi, Mbappe and Neymar. I mean, how crazy it is that how have we got used to this idea that those three guys are all three of the best players, like two 1 in a billion players and a 1 in 10 billion player are all there playing for PSG.
So aside from the bigger questions, it's just so underwhelming. Who's watching those matches, really? Occasionally in the Champions League, usually there's a better match on in a group stage than one involving PSG. So you're waiting basically for a knockout stage.
You're waiting for PSG to play Man City or Real Madrid. Yeah. You know, you're waiting for PSG to play another club that you're
to watch all these.
It's a waste of their time and a waste of our time. But, you know, they're just out there sucking down petrol. We've just got used to that. That's what's happening. We've just got used to it. And City are in that group of clubs. I mean, at least City are playing in, you know, a competition, which is, you know, I watch Man City most weeks.
But just on the club comments, they were interesting because he was asked a question about being able to compete with City. And he effectively said, look, you know what the answer is to this question.
Yeah.
I'll give it to you. You won't like it. They won't like it at City. Yeah. Here it is. And then he kind of gives the answer. He goes, you know, you wanted it. You asked for it. You know, you don't have to ask me. So it's like he was nerdy putting the journalist up on it while also giving chapter and verse as to what he thought the journalist wanted in the first place.
This really pisses off Man City because they don't like people pointing out the obvious truth. And it certainly annoys Guardiola because it diminishes his achievement. Yeah. I mean, when I say, how many trophies would they have won with, you know, with a manager who, if it hadn't been for Pep? I mean, in reality, I think that Guardiola has obviously got like an incredible level out of the team. Like, they're always going to have a good team because of the financial power behind the club. They're always going to have good players. But, you know, you didn't see Roberto Mancini or Manuel Pellegrini getting 100 points. You know what I mean? Like, so the sort of dominance, the kind of win rate that Guardiola has had, I don't believe necessarily that another manager, maybe Klopp might have been, I mean, Klopp's almost been able to match that with Liverpool. But you know, I do. So it is an exceptional achievement. But, you know, there are these. This was another of the type of defeat that we've seen before. So he also seemed to blame Kevin De Bruyne, actually, for the goal. Did you see that?
Pep did afterwards.
Yeah, I was surprised by that, actually, to single him out. I mean, I suppose it may be a case of...
Well, hang on. It was, sorry, because he was asked by Jeff Shreves. He mentions the mistake. Mm. We made a mistake. And Jeff Shreves goes, oh, what was the mistake?
Mm.
And it's sort of a meme now where Pep's looking at him like, huh?
What?
Like, what do you mean what was the mistake? It's so obvious. But I thought it was a fair question. Are you blaming... I presume it was Cancelo. But yeah. Are you saying that he's actually now?
I thought he said. I thought he didn't think Kevin doesn't follow the runner.
Oh, okay,
so it came from the situation where City got the free kick. Thiago, a foul was coming against Thiago for De Bruyne. De Bruyne took the free kick. It's a terrible free kick. But if you see the wide camera shot of this is an incredible piece of football theater. You can see De Bruyne watching, like, as though he's standing admiring his pass, but it's a bad pass.
Yeah,
it's really bad. Like, he kind of floats it high. It's a really easy catch for Alisson has time almost while he's going for the ball to see what's happening ahead of him, you know, and he's able to then very quickly play this pass. But as De Bruyne, after De Bruyne takes the free kick, he sort of stands watching it. And it's at that moment, as Salah can see, it's, okay, that's not a dangerous ball. Alisson's going to get it. Okay, I'm going to move. And he's already moving. And if De Bruyne had been aware of that, he could have been a lot closer to Salah. He ended up being like the close, one of the chasing players. But the ball came to, I thought, he thinks Cancelo's going to clear it. And I thought it was a mistake by him. I think Klopp said, no, it's not a mistake. It's just a brilliant play by Salah. And in fairness, it was great control.
Brilliant. But to hold a guy off and spin like that and keep the ball under control, put it exactly where you need it to go. But there was actually a great shot of, you can see the shot of, it's one of the replays, De Bruyne running back, chasing in vain, obviously too late at this stage. Mm. And I'm pretty sure at one stage he just goes, fuck. Because he sees that Salah is setting himself and ready to shoot. And he's probably thinking... Now, Kevin De Bruyne has got a smart football brain. He's probably thinking, look, Ederson saved it last time. Salah's not going to make the same mistake two times in a row.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been pretty amazing. It was a dramatic moment if he managed to miss that one again. Yeah, once you're through twice like that, you got to score at least once. But the other incredible thing about that wide shot, and this is like almost from just under the roof at Anfield, so you can see the whole thing, is that as the ball... is booted out by Alisson. You see it go over and you see it's coming to Cancelo and you see Pep in a secondary area watching it and the ball then goes through Cancelo and Salah is through and Pep just crumples to the ground with his head in his hands. just crumples. He's not even watching the thing. He's like, oh no, that's it. And he's done this so many times, Guardiola. It's a trademark thing that he does. He did it against Newcastle, remember, when Saint-Maximin got in and was sort of running out his defence. And you can just see Pep in the background having fallen to his knees and clutching his head, not even watching the game. Oh, it's over. But anyway, yeah, so that was that. We will talk to Jonathan, obviously, about that. I have to say, on the TV schedule yesterday, and you know, your outfit was blameless in this, was a scheduling catastrophe of Tyrone Mings' defensive header proportions.
I mean, I presume you watched, obviously, Wolves Forest, the big one on Saturday. The Saturday 3 p.m. kickoffs weren't exactly plum ties this weekend.
It was there was a lot of big games on the Sunday.
There were, yeah, way, yeah, more so than usual.
Sky, for some reason, decided Villa-Chelsea was the pick of the bunch. I didn't agree. I thought either Arsenal-Leeds or Leeds-Arsenal, rather, and Manchester-Newcastle would have been more interesting. Although, I suppose, Villa-Chelsea turned out to be a comparative goal fest compared to the other two. After Mings is, the only person I can remember seeing head a ball like that was probably Darwin Nunez in that preseason video.
Yeah, so explain it for people who didn't see it. The ball swung in fairly harmlessly and he seems to lose his bearings or mistime his jump or something, but he just sort of randomly heads it.
It was so strange. Like the ball, he's got so long, first of all, to deal with the ball because it's coming, like falling out of the sky, but it should be so easy. And he just kind of went and sort of headed it with the side of his head somehow and it just fell to Mount, who's right next to him, and Mount just whips it in. And Mount then scored a very strange goal. Did that shot get deflected or what happened? It was such a weird trajectory of the ball.
It's free kick?
Yeah.
I didn't think so.
I couldn't really, I thought it had because of the way that it went in. And then I couldn't see the reflection on it, and maybe it was just, I don't know, it was a strange strike. But anyway, it was a good goal for Chelsea, obviously. And Steven Gerrard before the game, I'm like, you know, Chelsea, they should come here, they should be challenged for it. They should come here and wipe the floor with us. And they did. So,
the Steven Gerrard interviews are just hilarious at the moment. They're all the same thing. I've got no problem with the pressure. I've got no problem.
Yeah, I'm
fully, he keeps saying, I'm fully aware of the outside noise. And I even noticed John McGinn said it. John McGinn said that the manager is fully aware of the outside noise. It's like, stop fucking talking about the outside noise. You're talking about it, you're making more noise.
Yeah.
And it's obviously seeping through to your players.
Yeah.
It just feels so like the end of the road, to be honest, for Gerrard.
I would agree on it. They're 16th. I mean, they're a point above relegation. You know, although at least his prediction was accurate, so maybe punditry, you know, just he's able to read the game very well, if not necessarily change the course of things. Arsenal obviously won again. Got a bit, I hesitate to use the L word, but fortunate maybe. with some of the things that happened there. Obviously Bamford, who looked like a character from With Nail and I thought when he was preparing to take his penalty, his hair was just,
he was a bit more bedraggled than usual.
He was just wild. There was just, everything looked wild, you know, and he was just like, oh, put and then knocks it wide, you know. But he had previously scored a goal which I didn't think was a foul. I mean, he got harshly, in my opinion, harshly ruled out.
He was in on goal another couple of times. He hasn't scored for ages. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's obviously had injuries and stuff. It's showing with Patrick Bamford at the moment. Maybe it's not so much that Arsenal got fortunate. It's that Patrick Bamford is just an extremely unfortunate moment at the moment. They also had another penalty given and then taken away by VAR at the end,
which I thought was actually the right decision. But what I couldn't understand about the decision, like, I think it was the right decision to take away the penalty, because Bamford fouls Gabriel first, right? Mm-hmm. Like he barges him, so that's a foul. But then Gabriel was sent off, I thought, for violent conduct after the foul. Like it was essentially for kicking out at Bamford, right? After he'd been knocked down. And that was, so they gave a penalty for this and also sent him off.
But you're saying that the violent conduct should have still stood.
Well, the violent conduct remained violent conduct.
Regardless of whether or not there was a penalty.
Yeah, like, I mean, the ball could go out for a throw and I could punch you in the face. Yeah. Is it a red card?
Yes.
Yeah, so I didn't really understand the logic behind the decision, even though I thought it was the right decision. To not give the penalty on that occasion. But yeah, I mean, Leeds thrashed them on the XG, as I'm sure Jesse Marsh probably mentioned at some point. But, you know, Arsenal went home with the point. So it's beginning to really look as though this could be promising for Arsenal, although they have to play in the Europa League this weekend. But things are going nicely. The Man United-Newcastle game turned out to be a bit of a disappointment.
Not least for Cristiano Ronaldo.
Well, you know, there was that strange incident again. I think maybe he was robbed there, right? Mm. I mean, the thing about it is that, like, I thought there is a whistle. Cher kind of rolls the ball back, and then sort of Nick Pope is standing there, sort of not doing anything, and he obviously thinks the ball is dead because he doesn't do anything. Ronaldo's kind of walking closer and closer to him, and he's, you know, he's not like saying, "Oh, you know, I better kick the ball away." So he obviously thinks it's, and then Ronaldo just like knocks it in, sort of trying his luck and doesn't get it. But I don't know. I thought on another day that could have, but I think United already had the, you know, the fair share of decisions going their way with this unbelievable decision not to give a penalty against Varane. You know, it's like, how is that not a penalty? Again, you know, a boring analysis. Well, the referee should have done this when he did this. But it wasn't.
It's unavoidable.
It wasn't such a great game. And what else happened? Tottenham obviously again plugging away gamely. Matt Doherty back in the team.
Good to see.
Creating that opening goal for Harry Kane, of course. Firing in that shot that was too hot for Pickford to handle.
Yeah, it wasn't much of a shot, but it was too hot to handle.
Pickford then commits a foul with his head.
It's funny because with Pickford, I sometimes think, is Pickford, are people a bit, as in, I think Irish people, I don't know really what English, but there's always a sense, we're always like, Pickford. There's a mistake in Pickford.
Yeah.
How is this guy the England goalkeeper? There's a mistake. But then he doesn't actually, I don't know if he makes as many mistakes as we think. His expected mistakes are probably massive. But his actual mistakes aren't always, I don't know if there are that many. That one was bad. That was a bad double howler there at the weekend, confirming all our worst fears.
I thought the penalty was maybe a touch harsh. But I suppose it's hard. Because I thought that he kind of tried to go for it. He didn't actually touch Kane with his hands. I think it was his head that tripped him up. Is that a foul? I mean...
Well, yeah.
Yeah, when Harry Kane's leg connects with your head, that's a foul against Harry Kane, is it? Or it's a Harry Kane against the... Yeah, I mean, I don't know. But who has the highest save percentage in the Premier League?
Jordan Pickford,
Owen.
There you go. That's what I'm saying.
82%. 82% at this point, which is, yeah.
I know Murph's not here, but Murph likes the battle of the England goalkeepers. Found out at the weekend when doing that Forest game that Dean Henderson has conceded 10 goals from outside his box this season. That's
really?
Quite a lot of goals. It's more than any other goalkeeper.
That's crazy. Yeah. They have had a couple of kind of big beatings, I suppose. But
but big beatings, but you still probably should be saving more shots from range.
Well, Popey, my man Popey and Pickford, they're up the top of the save percentages. Fabianski is the first non-English goalkeeper of West Ham. Hugo Lloris is surprisingly high, just ahead of Alisson. But if I go down to find Dean Henderson, well, he's 18th out of 21, just below David De Gea and Ederson.
This is percentage, is it?
Percentage, 57% save right. percentage. And below him are only three players, but immediately below Dean Henderson is our boy Gavin Bazunu. Gavin Bazunu is 57, Danny Ward 47, and bottom of the list with a 40% save percentage in the Premier League, that's three out of every shots are going in, is Mark Travers. So,
hey, we're here to slag off the England goalkeepers. Talked about Bazunu and Travers before.
So there we are. But like, again, our guys can only get better from here. Now, where were we? Oh yeah, so we there's a couple of other things. There was also obviously a big match, Real Madrid against Barcelona, won very comfortably by Real Madrid. Karim Benzema, who's going to win the Ballon d'Or today, scored the first goal. Valverde scored a fantastic second goal, hammering it in from the edge of the box. And then the third goal was a penalty in injury time. Ferran Torres had got the goal for Barcelona, a late goal for them, but then they ended up losing 3-1 anyway. So it's not looking great for the white-trousered wonder of the dugout, Xavi, who has, as all the Spanish media were repeating yesterday, the worst record of any coach who has reached 50 matches with Barcelona. It's 28 wins, 11 draws, and 11 defeats. So,
whoa.
It's worse than Ronald Koeman, who obviously was regarded as being a disgrace to the club. I mean, not when he was a player. He was one of their best players. But as a manager, no one had any time for him. And Xavi's record is worse than that.
There was an element with Xavi, I guess, well, the fans all love him so much that they were going to give him some time. And obviously there's the young players that he's supposed to bring through. But then when you go and sign Robert Lewandowski, maybe that changes things somewhat.
And this is the thing, you know, this is what makes it, I think, very bad. I mean, Xavi had, for example, this was his first away defeat as Barcelona manager. So until then, I think it was 18 matches unbeaten. And there's only one coach that I could think of who had such an incredible unbeaten run away from home. And that was Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And all I can say is that going on a mad unbeaten run away from home like that doesn't necessarily mean that much. But it's in the context of what else is happening in the Spanish league that this is pretty embarrassing. Well, the context is nobody else spending anything because none of them have any money. I mean, there's a reason why Florentino Perez is trying to escape. He's trying to build an escape pod to get out of La Liga. Like Barcelona spent, €153 million, which is way more than anybody else. Their net spend is €118 million, which actually in the Premier League doesn't even sound like that much, €118 million. But the next biggest spending club in net terms is Atletico Madrid, it's €19 million. So €118 net to €19 net. That's the second most. There are 6 clubs who made a profit on transfers, including Real Madrid, who the only player they signed was Tchouaméni. So Barcelona have come in, you know, obviously, Laporta did all the quasi-Quartang stuff. You know, we're going to grow, we're going to get big fast, we're going to move fast and break things, and levered them up. And, you know, so they had Drake was involved in the game yesterday somehow. I think Drake put a massive bet in crypto on Barca to win, but obviously he would have lost that. But again, things, you know, it's something to do with some gambling company he was promoting, I'm guessing.
Drake's going to be all right.
I think Drake will be okay. But that's where Barcelona are at now, doing deals with Drake, you know, for coins. And now, and spending all that on, by the way, a big number nine, Diego Torres, as we know, has been going on, his whole theme of the year is tanks. Is the tank obsolete? I mean, we've seen a lot of that with the war in Ukraine, but Diego Torres is looking at it on the football field. Is the tank still part of modern football? And right now, he seems to be the only thing that's really going for Barcelona, is Lewandowski. He set up the goal for Torres yesterday. He's been bashing in goals for them all season. And in the Champions League, he's been the only thing that's been sort of keeping them remotely in with a chance.
The game last week was hilarious. He keeps equalising, just about keeping his slim hope of staying in the Champions League alive.
But this is not what Xavi is supposed to be all about. This is not the gospel Xavi preaches. You know, and then a 6'3" pole, you know, built like a Terminator will come and smash in headers into the top corner from long diags that you pump into the box desperately. That's not what it's supposed to be about. So yeah, I don't think it's going too well for him. We should just mention also that Kylian Mbappe claims that last week's stories about him wanting to leave Paris Saint-Germain are completely untrue. The quotes are sort of interesting. I'm very happy. I've never asked to leave in January. I'm not implicated directly or indirectly in the speculation. The reports were believed to have come from his entourage. I don't understand why the story came out in the day of the game. I was as shocked as everyone. People can think I was involved, but I wasn't at all. So the Times or whatever says, the source of the stories are believed to be members of his entourage. So then there's this quote from Mbappe. I was having a rest, and my entourage were watching my little brother. Does he actually say that? I mean, entourage is a French word, right? So maybe it just means, you know, my friends.
How big an entourage is required for babysitting duties?
I don't know. I mean, you know, you would think maybe one or maybe two of them could have done that, and then the rest could.
You can turn on the PlayStation for him. You get him an orange juice.
Yeah. I don't know if this is meant to be an alibi. Like, they were all watching my little brother, so they couldn't possibly have briefed journalists that I was trying to leave in January. We couldn't believe it when we heard about the story. So anyway, he says he's not leaving in January.
Okay.
And it does seem unlikely that he would, because they're still going to have a Champions League campaign to play. So I don't see them letting him leave before then, whatever the circumstance.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Very pleased to say we can speak to the Liverpool manager, Jurgen Klopp, now joining us. What did you like about your team's performance tonight?
Everything. Did I hear Dreider, Mr. Keane, said we had a sloppy performance tonight? No, because I could hear you already. Did he say that? Cannot be this game. Sorry.
Jurgen Klopp said the other day, but Man City had a break because of the virus when their game was called off against Man City. I think they missed 2 days training. They are making a lot of excuses. To me, they've been bad champions.
This was a sloppy performance tonight. I just want to only hear it, because I'm not sure if I heard it right. Maybe he spoke about another game. But about this game tonight, there's nothing bad to say.
Jurgen Klopp said there, maybe the goalkeeper's feet was cold. Just excuses after excuses. Talking about Liverpool, there, people keep telling me Liverpool's a great club and a huge club. Well, you keep performing like that, it'll be another 30 years before you win the league title. No, can you hear me?
Sloppy. Yes, I don't know. I look at a speaker and only heard the word sloppy. That's in that game tonight, and then it was the wrong one.
You need to hear the rest of it.
We've got Jonathan Wilson in front of us in studio today, a rare treat. Jonathan, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Good. To be here.
Yeah, what has he in town?
I was doing a Dublin Libraries event yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Discussing my my new book, which would be a tremendous Christmas present to brothers.
It will be. I'm reading it at the moment, Jonathan, and I can endorse that. And I'm not only saying that because I'm actually a feature in the book, Ken.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Oh yeah.
In the glossary to chapter 19, there is my name in there. I'm frantically searching. Where's my fucking name in
there? Straight to the index.
Yeah, the Harry Ramsden's challenge, fish and chips, all that kind of stuff. Wait, there's an amazing sentence you have, Jonathan. It says that the whole Harry Ramsden's thing was a curious echo of Jack's own argument over starters with Bill Lambton when he was at Leeds. So wasn't it, what the hell was that?
So Bill Lambton was one of a series of absolutely useless managers Leeds had
pre-Revy,
before Revy. Yeah. And they'd been at some hotel restaurant and Jack was really hungry. And I think he wanted soup and melon. No, he wanted two starters. And Lambton was sort of, no, you can't do that. Like, you have one starter. That's what happens in restaurants.
You have one starter, then you have your steak.
And Jack was furious because he felt Lambton was suggesting that he didn't understand how to behave himself properly. So it was a class-driven thing.
Ah, okay.
And Jack was like, I'm just hungry. Just like, give me more food.
So I'll tell you what, listen, we'll have to talk about the book properly in due course. You know, not just Jack's dietary habits, but there's a lot of really, really interesting stuff about both Jack and Bobby. And we will talk today about Liverpool and City and everything that happened yesterday. The headline is Liverpool are back, or are they?
I mean, there's definitely signs that the embers hadn't gone out as much as we thought they had. But I mean, yeah, they haven't lost at home for 18 months.
Yeah.
So maybe we had sort of written them off a bit too quickly. But I have to say, when I saw the teams, I was sort of thinking, God, what's it going to be? 3-4-5-0 at the City? And then...
What, was that largely because of Milner up against Foden again, or what was it?
I mean, that was a big part of it, yeah. But then actually the way it worked, because Foden wasn't really playing as the winger in the 4-3-3, because he was playing... is a sort of wing-back type thing. I mean, it seemed like a bit of a hybrid formation. It wasn't a pure 3-5-2, but it certainly wasn't a pure 4-3-3. So that seemed to kind of diminish Cancelo playing on the right rather than the left and playing as a wing-back. But also it meant Foden wasn't right up against Milner, which meant he sort of came into the orbit of Harvey Elliott, who I thought had a really good game.
Yeah.
His energy sort of... blocking up that area in front of Joe Gomez and Milner. And so that threat down the left that I assumed City would have just wasn't there.
Do you think that, I mean, you're talking about City's formation, that Pep actually did overthink this in the traditional style? You know, let's move Foden to the left, Cancelo to the right, and drop Grealish? I mean, when you know, in the perspective of having lost the game 1-0, you do look back at that and think, did you really need to do that? I mean, you know, they've been winning their games easily, stylishly. Grealish actually playing the best he's played for City, and that's the decision.
Yeah, I mean, I it's a change of shape that baffles me. I can see the logic of we want to get Gundogan into midfield to just have a bit more protection in there. So I can see that shift, but I don't understand why you would move away from a 4-3-3. And I know Pep makes all these changes all the time, and when they work, we don't really even notice them. And it's when they go wrong, we point them out. Mm-hmm. But I do wonder, there was a sort of fraughtness to Pep from the start, from that very first handshake. And I wonder if Klopp's comments on Friday about the difficulty of battling against a state-run club, I do wonder if that rattled him. Not so much in the sense that it pricked his conscience about who actually is funding my little special project here, but maybe it's not even my project. And so he had to prove it's not just about the money, it's not just about this ridiculous goal troll up front. It is actually about my cleverness, and here's me being clever. And I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into that.
That is one of the great mind games by Jurgen Klopp, if he did manage to essentially fool Pep into doing that.
Yeah, I mean, if he did it on purpose, it's absolutely genius. I mean, it's Le Carre level stuff. But I would assume it's an unintended consequence of him making a very reasonable point about the financial disparities and the fact that Liverpool can't afford a mistake, basically, in the transfer market, where City can...
Leave Grealish on the bench.
Leave a £100 million player on the bench, yeah.
I think you are right about this. I think that did happen here. I mean, there have been suggestions, I think, from City that... because there was a lot of kind of aggro surrounding the game, you know? So there was coins thrown at Guardiola... from by the Liverpool fans. There were chants from the City fans, which Liverpool have issued a statement condemning. City's attitude supposedly is that that what Klopp said on Friday heated things up.
Yeah,
that already you've got history here. You've got the bus attack, you know, which Pep referred to again. This was when they were arriving for one of the Champions League games at Anfield, and the bus got pelted, and that, you know, when you do this, this is sort of what happens when you heat up the pot. Sometimes it boils over, but they're kind of, you know, that's sort of suggesting that yeah, we did take offense to that. He did go down in my estimation when he said when he said those things.
I mean, to be clear, what this is, it's a briefing from City where they sort of they've said this is not to be quoted. This is not a City spokesman said, but the gist of it is exactly what Ken's just said. Of yeah, look, we condemn these chants, and yeah, you know, it was chants about Hillsborough and you know, the Sun were right, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's a pretty horrific stuff. But then this, you know, but it's actually your fault. Yeah, you brought this on yourself by heating the pot, which I think is a bizarre. I mean, it's not. I was about to say bizarre statement. It's not a statement. A bizarre tone for a club to be taking in its briefings, because basically, I mean, they boil that down. What's that saying? What that's saying is, if you comment on the financial disparities between our clubs, then we are entitled to mock your dead. I mean, is that. And that's just like so irresponsible and just so offensive. I was genuinely sort of gobsmacked when I saw that.
Yeah, I mean I can see why. What Klopp had basically said was, you know, there are three clubs that have no ceiling. Other clubs have ceilings, and he was referring to City, PSG, and Newcastle. And obviously, this kind of strikes at the heart of. You know, what City are doing. It's something that the City can't, City fans certainly won't ever accept, because it sort of it puts a cloud over what they've done, you know, in the sense that they're sort of winning by different, they're playing by different rules to the competition. So yeah, I can see why it annoys them, and obviously why it annoys Guardiola, but it definitely did. Guardiola was pissed off, and Guardiola kept saying after the game, "This is Anfield, this is Anfield." This was like his slogan. I think it's quite interesting to kind of dig into what he means there. There's a few things going on, but I think underlying it is Guardiola thinks that Liverpool are what are the English Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. Right. He actually thinks that they're the sort of the establishment club who actually control the whole system. And that everybody wants them to win. When in fact, I mean, it's the opposite. Like when I think most neutrals are happy for Man City to smash Liverpool because it's funnier. You know what I mean?
It was to start with. I mean, now the City have won four of the last five titles.
Yeah,
I don't know if most neutrals want City to keep winning the league. I don't know if that's right.
No, but I think five years ago that probably was the case.
But if you think back to last season, you know, the last day of the season, I mean, I think there was. You know, people were happy enough because it's as though when City win the league, it's like, well, that's the expected outcome. Whereas if Liverpool were to win the league in this circumstance, oh, we'd never hear the end of this. You know.
I think there's a lot of unpacking there. I mean, I think there was definitely a sense that we don't want anybody to do the quadruple. The quadruple is, well, once it's done, the fun of chasing it isn't there anymore. So you don't want that to happen. Whether people were anti-Liverpool as such, I doubt. But I mean, there's no doubt that the way football has gone in the last sort of 10, 15 years, Liverpool have become the scrappy outsider, which is preposterous when they're run by an American hedge fund. But that's the ludicrous nature of a modern game. But this is Anfield thing. I mean, it clearly is a line that Guardiola had thought about, and was, because apparently he was saying that on the touchline, that way he was kind of walking down the touchline, waving his hands above his head. Bizarrely whipping the crowd up.
This in a totally exactly the opposite of what you're meant to do.
Irresponsible way in terms of public order, but also an irresponsible way in terms of Manchester City winning the football match.
Because that's only going to suit one team. Getting the atmosphere more whipped up is going to suit Liverpool based on style of play and them being the home team. A bit of chaos is better.
Exactly. And style of play, I think, create chaos and shape the chaos is Klopp's way of doing it, rather than the more Apollonian... calm it all down style of Pep, which he's had to compromise slightly because of Haaland. which is another tactical point maybe we can come on to. But he then repeated this is Anfield line in the press conference with the written press. He said it to Sky, he said it to the BBC, he said it in radio interviews. And the thing it reminded me of was the end of Chinatown, where, you know, forget it, Jake, it's Chinatown, as if kind of, this is a lawless zone, of course we can't win here, what can we do here? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Guardiola has gone with City to Anfield 8 times. He's lost 5, drawn 2, won 1. 1 he won was when there's no fans. But I also wonder if there's another thing there of him thinking, and I think the main implication is referees don't behave rationally at Anfield.
Well, they don't. The main implication I took from it is you can't get a fair referee at Anfield.
Yeah, but I think there's also an undertone of this is actually the atmosphere I want.
And you the think?
Yeah. I think there's a sort of, I want the club I manage, I want their stadium to generate an atmosphere like this where referees are affected.
I honestly think that what he's saying there is like his retort to the charge that, we all know why City win. It's because of Sheikh Mansour. It's because of the money. And he's kind of saying, you've got like basically every home game you play, the referees are just rolling.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's the sort of the main bulk of it.
Yeah.
But I think there is an undertone of, and I wish we had that as well.
What did you make of? I mean, if you actually look at the because Pep wasn't the only manager who lost it. I mean, Klopp got sent off for screaming in the guy's face, the assistant referee. But it was one of the most interesting matches from a refereeing point of view. People don't like talking about referees, but in this case, it actually was interesting because it was such a dominating factor of the match. And both of the managers were driven mad by what the referee was doing. Even though ultimately the decisions work better for Klopp, even though he was the one who got sent off. So what did you think of the actual decision to rule out the Man City goal?
I just don't understand why it's controversial. I just think it's correct.
It's controversial, I think, because it's like, why are you going back that far?
Why? But it's sort of like, what, 2, 3, 4 passes?
Well, it's controversial because the referee, according to Pep, went into the dressing rooms or wherever they have these conversations beforehand, his office, spoke to Klopp, spoke to Pep's assistant and said, off you go, lads.
Yeah.
I'm not going to call any fouls.
Basically,
today.
There are no rules today.
Which he employed pretty much the entire way through the game, let loads of stuff go. Like that one, that Bernardo Silva one on Salah, which...
Looks slightly
reminiscent of the Ramos Salah one, if not quite with the same devastating.
Yeah, it's just he's not as strong as.
So basically,
Ramos.
The one time I know it's VAR, they're the ones that called it, but they're still showing the referee. So when the referee has a chance to look at the replay of his decision to let it go, like he was letting the other ones go, he decides not to let it go anymore because it resulted in a goal.
Right. No, but I think
all we ask for is consistency, Jonathan, to quote all the players and managers.
But I think Guardiola's been massively disingenuous there. It's not the case of, we're going to let a load of fouls go. We're redefining what a foul is. And that's not Anthony Taylor. That's the Premier League at the beginning of the season. And they've said, shoulder-to-shoulder contact, a little bit of grappling for the ball. Even if you know, when you challenge, you just sort of brush the other bloke's calf on the way through. That's all fine, really. But there's always a line at which it's too much. And pulling somebody's shirt is not ever a legitimate way of winning
the
ball.
There's no way. So you're saying that was more of a foul than, for example, that one on Salah, or the one where Salah got kicked in the first half, really clearly kicked, which was...
Oh, well, that was crazy. Yeah, this is right.
No. What I'm saying is, I think there's 3 instances where Salah was actually fouled quite badly and it wasn't given.
Yeah.
I think that's in the interpretation of... there's a spectrum there in that type of foul between what you allow and what you don't. I think they were significantly more towards what we shouldn't allow than what you should, but they were on that spectrum. Shirt pulling is not on that spectrum. Shirt pulling is an offence. Doesn't matter how little you pull the shirt.
I think those other ones are offences as well. I think the Bernardo Silva one is definitely offence.
I agree, but
the Bernardo Silva one, he was hanging out of his shirt by both hands. Yeah. So that was also shirt pulling in addition to whatever else it was.
As soon as you pull the shirt, it is a foul.
Yeah.
Now, I get that they can be missed by the referee, particularly when his view is blocked by Haaland in this case. I understand why Anthony Taylor didn't see it. It doesn't matter. There's a whole lot of, oh, Fabinho was toppling anyway. It doesn't matter. As soon as you pull the shirt, it's a foul.
No, I agree. That I think we're all agreed and that was a foul.
And so as soon as VAR sees that, and one of the things VAR can see very clearly is a hand pulling a shirt, whereas the amount of weight put into a shoulder challenge or whatever, that's a much more subjective decision. This isn't subjective. It's objective.
Yeah, I don't agree that the other ones were particularly subjective either, to be honest.
I'm not denying the bad decisions. I just think they're a red herring in this discussion.
They're not really, because you're ending up in a situation where essentially you can kick the shit out of people around the pitch, no problem, and especially defenders can do what they want to attacking players. And yet, if something leads to a goal, the whole point of let it flow, I thought, was to get more exciting football and fast flowing, all that kind of stuff, more goals, more everything. But you're in a position where you get a goal ruled out for the same sort of foul that isn't being given against defenders in situations
where they're stopping goals. Yeah, no, it's, I mean, you're exactly
no,
right.
No, that is true, but that's the nature of VAR.
I read your column, Ken. It crystallised
a
thought in my head.
There's a stricter liability in the build-up to goals.
It's a full-court press here, Jonathan, so continue.
There's a stricter liability in the build-up to goals than at other times. That's the nature of VAR. But yeah, the whole ludicrousness of going on about this incident when the PGMOL have said that they would also rule it out for the challenge in Alisson, which, to be honest, I haven't seen enough.
Yeah, I haven't really seen it back myself because that kind of got lost in the whole thing anyway.
Well, it became random. But also, the incident that comes from is a goal kick which should have been a corner. So City have got the goal kick they shouldn't have got that then leads to a foul, then leads to another foul that leads to the goal. I mean, how many reasons do you want to rule it out?
Yeah, and the mad thing is that they actually did say later that the Haaland challenge on Alisson was a foul too, right? So so I'm like, okay, so I can't remember who exactly said that, like the refereeing.
The PGMOL.
Yeah, that's what Jonathan said there.
Yeah, so there's two fouls that the referee doesn't blow for. It's like, what are you doing? You know what I mean? And then they're like, well, if we hadn't ruled it out for one, it would have been the other. But it's just this incredibly stupid situation where this policy, which is designed to, you know, make things better, is in fact having only one reliable effect, which is to send people crazy, right? And to have them screaming about the referees and the managers being sent off and the players pushing and shoving each other and the crowd singing, you know, offensive chants and throwing coins, right? That's actually the outcome of randomly enforcing the rules one way or the other. So I don't know how long they're going to keep going with this nonsense.
You might be absolving some of the individuals there of behaving in a less insane manner.
Well, yeah.
Managers in particular.
Yeah, although, you know, I mean, Klopp was saying afterwards, I don't want to give an excuse, and then gave the excuse of... well, I mean, how is that not a foul? You know, because obviously it's like you're only going to enforce it when it leads directly to a goal. VAR doesn't get involved when it's a foul out by the touchline. But that could have been a goal, or certainly at least should have been a free kick in an attacking position.
Do you like the let it flow while you're here in studio with Ken?
you can't actually say yes. See, this is the thing. You want to say yes because... You know, because you fit, you're a patriotic Englishman, but you know that you can't. Well, it's just nonsense.
Well, no, I.
Do you want to have your cake and eat it, Jonathan?
Well, ideally, yeah. And I think we're all lies if we say we don't want to do that. It's not a black or white. There's a scale here, and I don't want, you know, 150 free kicks given a game for a couple of shoulders nudge against each other. Mm-hmm. I want an element of physicality in the game. I want it to flow. Whether we've stepped slightly too far towards the flowiness rather than whistliness, then that's probably true.
I just think...
But I mean, I just sort of think, it doesn't matter how much you're letting it flow, those were three fouls on Salah.
Yeah, yeah. If you want fewer fouls, I think you should punish fouls. Discourage it by punishing it. Don't... they're just saying, let's... They're encouraging foul. They're encouraging players to foul, basically incentivizing fouls. But you know, okay, let's. There's no more really to say about that. Just on the subject of City's performance in the second half. City, I thought in the first half were pretty good. Like, you know, they were the more dominant team on the ball. You know, Haaland had that great chance from the De Bruyne cross. There was a couple of other moments. You know, you always got the sense they were dangerous, and I felt they were kind of in control. That went in the second half. And it went at the moment when Guardiola basically turned around to whip up the crowd, like his protege, Arteta, the last manager I could remember doing something like that at that stadium. And also another guy who's obsessed with, you know, remember Arteta's whole getting the speakers out in the training pitch to play, "You'll never walk alone, we're going to Anfield, this place is crazy." And then they go out, he loses his head and they lose 4-0. It was just what? You know, but so he kind of lost his cool, obviously whipped up the crowd to hysterics. And that seemed to translate onto the pitch. But there's also this other element, which you have mentioned already, which is to do with, is what happened to City there part of the price of having Haaland in the team? Because he kind of wasn't really so much of a factor in the second half of the game. He wasn't really much involved at all. But definitely the usual control that City had was absent. There's a lot of reasons for that. But how much of it does it have to do with Haaland? Because it's something I think Pep will be thinking about.
Yeah, I mean, when it goes wrong for City, it always goes wrong in the same way, which is they get done by balls played behind the defensive line, which pushes high. And, you know, even things like, you know, the defeat to Lyon in the Champions League, that was how it happened. When they lost to Frank Lampard's Chelsea, the game that gave Liverpool the title, that was Chelsea got in behind them. And that's the flaw in the Guardiola system. And he's well aware of that. And you can sort of say the whole of the last decade or so has been him trying to work out a way to mitigate that. And I think that whole thing that he used to say, that it takes 15 passes to get the structure right so we don't get counted against. I think that's an incredibly interesting way, or incredibly revealing about how he sees the game. Because, you can obviously only do that with really good teams, because a bad team won't be able to string 15 passes together. So he's playing at that level where 15 passes, you just assume you can do it, and you create that structure. And yet still, that is a thing that over the last decade has repeatedly gone wrong for them. Even going back to the Torres goal in the 2012
the Chelsea semi-final. Yeah.
I know that was right at the end of the game and the shape of the game had gone a bit. But Haaland magnifies that flaw, because he needs the ball played forward quickly. If you don't get it forward to him quickly, you get a situation as you got in the Community Shield, where he's making the runs and the ball's not getting there. So City have been playing the ball forward quicker this season. It's brought them loads of goals, brought Haaland loads of goals. It looked great. But I think Pep's always known that flaw is there, and it worries him. And I think that's probably why he changed the shape, why he went to the quasi back three, the hybrid system. And yet still, that was where it went wrong. Not only with the goal, but the chance Salah had that led to the goal kick that shouldn't have been, that led to the Haaland pull on Fabinho, that led to the foul on Alisson, that led to the goal that was ruled out, which led to everything else.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Darwin Nunez's...
Oh, we've been talking a bit about Darwin already. He stole the show.
Yeah. Ken was pointing out yesterday that in the time when Nunez was on the pitch and sort of make it all about just his own sort of head down display, running, ignoring players. But Haaland only touched the ball three times, and one of them was the kickoff. It was a defensive header and then a sort of disappointing header that went over the bar. So he fell quietly while Nunez was failing with a great
cacophony. Do you think Nunez is going to make it?
I think he's making it pretty hard for himself.
See, is it yips, right? Because he actually reminds me a bit of Diego Forlan. You know, when he joined Manchester United, I mean, he's a totally different player from Diego Forlan, but there's something similar about the way that, although I think, did Forlan take ages to even score a goal?
Yeah, I think he did.
There was some, and he eventually smashed Liverpool at Anfield. That was like his kind of breakthrough. And then he was almost gone immediately after that. But, or even Andy Cole. You know, Andy Cole was one of the best strikers of the Ferguson era. When he joined Manchester United, was pretty bad for... It was actually... Do you remember the goal against Newcastle? Obviously, he left Newcastle for Man United, but I think it was the following season.
Around Christmas time.
That's right.
A nice goal against
he scored a great goal. And remember what he said after? He said, "I put a bit of welly on it." because he scored five against Ipswich in a game, but it didn't really still click for him. He was still kind of missing chances and looking nervous and being kind of a shadow of the player that they thought they had signed. And it was only when that happened that he seemed to have a psychological breakthrough. You know, I can do this. I feel good about this now again. And I do wonder if that's going to happen with Nunez. the thing that makes me think it probably will is that nobody can be as bad as he looks. It, you know, in the chip. I'm honest, I took him for a bit.
I'd even forgotten the chip. I was thinking there was two of those chances. One, there was three. You're right.
He had a shot wide. Then he had the ridiculous moment where he ran through, and there's two players that he could pass to, and he passed it to the defender. And you're thinking, how has he managed to do that? Then he had the cross, which
yeah, he attempted the really hard cross to Alexander Arnold.
Yeah, when it was much easier. Much easier cutback.
He hit the cross too hard. I mean, originally the kind of run past the defender was good, and then the cross was just, oh, come on, you know. But then the chip. I've never seen anyone do that.
But sorry, so why are you saying that this all convinces you he will make it? Because he's getting himself into position to do it?
No, well, I honestly just can't believe that anyone is as bad as that. You know what I mean? To do that.
Like, you're not slightly worried by the example of Timo Werner?
Timo Werner never did anything as crazy as that. You know, Timo was hitting a lot of ineffectual shots wide.
Dragging,
you know,
a lot of shots wide, yeah, to the keeper's right.
But he wasn't just producing spectacular moments of incompetence like that. Like, that's something beyond. And that's why I think it's kind of yips. You know what I mean? Like, how good he's ultimately going to be, I don't know. But he can't be that bad. Mm. Like, you know, I'm setting this all out.
The positive is that he was... Every game he's been very, very involved in. He's one of those players who makes things happen. And normally I sort of think that will come right eventually, but I just...
You're not sure.
I just have Timo Werner on my shoulder going, don't forget how long these bad runs can go on for.
Yeah. Although, you know, and the fact is that Klopp didn't play him in this game because, you know, he's not good enough to be involved in the starting lineup against City. Although maybe when the game then started to go crazy, you're like, actually, this is his type of game. You know, put him. But that's what Klopp decided to do. Meanwhile, Grealish is sitting there on the other bench, and I thought that was interesting as well. Because remember what we were talking about with City, and you know, the 15 passes and the patience and the, you know, let's all move up the pitch together. And you could see them doing that in the first half. Like, there's moments when they're kind of moving forward and Gundogan has a ball and then he suddenly turns around and like passes it back, and you can see the players kind of moving up past this. You know, not a lot of teams really do that. You know, City are a particular type of team, but you know, usually if a team has the kind of initiative in attack, they're kind of going for it. Certainly Liverpool are usually doing that. Kind of keep attacking, keep moving forward. And City are kind of moving back forward, and then get everyone up and around the ball. And Guardiola has spoken this season about how Grealish is one of the best players for that. Like, he's got the patience to help them play this kind of game, you know, and when he's not there, they miss him. But the truth of what he thinks of Grealish is the fact that he didn't bring him on. You know what I mean? If that's exactly what you need in this game, if you've talked about this guy and how he brings that kind of composure and presence on the ball, that's exactly what you need in this game. So why aren't you using him?
Yeah, I mean, it would be a remarkable change in perceptions of Grealish if he really is the most composed man at Manchester City.
Yeah,
I mean, you look at that game and you look at Grealish's temperament and you think, he's going to get clattered and he's going to react to it and he's going to get
Grealish, does he react? He always gets clattered. I've never seen him.
Yeah, maybe
him.
He doesn't react, but...
He doesn't. This is the thing about Grealish. He gets clattered so much.
He does get clattered a lot, yeah.
Well, Souness has obviously criticises him for, you know, not moving the ball quickly enough. But that's why he gets fouled up, because he is not worried about people coming close to them. You know, he's not worried about holding onto the ball under pressure. And that's exactly what City need. It's exactly what Guardiola says he does. And it's exactly the thing City needed in the game. And yet, when the chips were down, he left them on the bench like he left them there for most of the Champions League.
He didn't make a sub until very late, did he, Guardiola?
He often does that in games. I can't remember what his first...
I got a feeling sort of 89th minute or something.
Yeah, he's not a big... He likes to use a lot of subs when they're winning and he just wants to rest a few guys. But no, in the case of the game yesterday, it was Alvarez was the only substitute, so it came on for Gundogan in the 89th minute.
Hmm. A lot of people are talking about how whether or not this gives Liverpool any faint chance of a charge at the title, but we really should be talking about Arsenal because they're the big beneficiaries of this result. Jonathan, 4 points clear at the top of the league, genuine title contenders.
Well, I mean, I think the last four teams to win 9 of the first 10 games have gone on to win the title.
Apparently so.
So, I mean, you can't say they're not contenders. I'd still be amazed, but... and I sort of felt it was a slightly ragged win over Leeds that... and this may be that I just haven't seen the right angle, but I don't really understand why the Bamford goal was ruled out. I can see where there might have been a push, but none of the angles I've seen have shown a push. Mm. The missed penalty. I don't think it was... I don't know how many games Arsenal can have where you can sort of go, ah, well, at least they're showing a bit of the resilience they've lacked.
Well, that's kind of what Arteta said afterwards. It's a great sort of game to win with all this stuff going on.
Sure, no, Arsenal fans don't like when I use this word, but resilience and luck are two different things.
Well, maybe they haven't been very lucky in recent seasons then, Ken.
Well, that could be true. They've had some wretched luck. It is a terrible pity that they're not playing City this week, which is what they're meant to be doing. This would have been such a great time. I think they're to be playing City at home in a night game. City just coming off that tough game that they've just had.
You're telling them, presenting on Premier Sports this week. That would have been a nice one.
It would. This was
meant to get into fray. But it had the atmosphere at the Emirates last couple of games would have been as good volcanic as it's ever been.
Yeah.
So why is that? Why is that?
Because remember Arsenal's Europa League game against PSV got postponed because it was around the time the Queen died. Mm. So they're playing that game this week, which meant that the City game they were meant to play on Wednesday got postponed. Okay. So I think that's unfortunate for Arsenal the way things are going. Although, you know, it's not as though they played that well against Leeds. So maybe they'll, you know, maybe it's not the moment. But I just feel as though, yeah, this would have been a good time to really, having won 9 out of 10, to have a go at City and see if they could then open that up to 7 points, but they don't get the opportunity.
We might as well finish by talking about Liverpool because they did win the game. It wasn't all about City's shortcomings. The formation that they had, the way they played, is that sustainable for the rest of the season against other teams, or was it specific to the challenge posed by City?
Well, I mean, the sort of 4-2-3-1 or 4-4-2, whatever you want to call it, is clearly where Klopp sees it going. I think getting Salah through the middle definitely helped. And I think one of the problems he'd had was that playing wide on the right with a more orthodox centre-forward than Firmino or Jota meant that he wasn't getting into the box as much. So, and that had partly been caused by the signing of Luis Diaz last January, that him playing on the left had pushed Mane into the middle, which meant that there wasn't a sort of withdrawn forward as a more orthodox forward. So the number of shots per game that Salah had up to the game against Chelsea on January the 2nd, which was his last game for the Cup of Nations, so the last game before Diaz arrived, I think he was 3.9 per game. This season, before yesterday, had been 2.9 per game. So he just wasn't getting as many shooting opportunities. You play him through the middle, and he can get back in that sort of inside right role where, you know, he's so good cutting in. So that, I think, definitely works. And, you know, in the 4-2-3-1 previously, he'd been playing wide right and hadn't had that central role. That clearly does create issues for Darwin Nunez, because logically he has to play with Firmino or possibly Jota as and when Luis Diaz returns.
Well, he could play with Salah in the middle, or he could play as apparently he's doing for Uruguay. He was saying on the
he has been playing on the left for Uruguay. I don't think he's been playing particularly well for Uruguay on the left, but he has been playing on the left for Uruguay in a 4-5-1.
So it'd be a bit like Fellaini for Falcao at Man United. Remember?
Or Emil Heskey
when he was using Fellaini as a big aerial, like a big wall on the left side to head the ball down to his little lads. You know, maybe something like that.
Fabinho looked much better as well, which I think is significant. But I think Harvey Elliott's role was specific for City. I assume he'd be more attacking in other games.
He was good, though.
You
he
think
was
he's good?
Well, that little triangle of Gomez, I mean, Gomez I thought was excellent.
Yeah.
Which I think, from an England point of view, given that they now look to be without Walker and James for the World Cup, him to come in at right side of centre back is I think at least sort of eases that worry a bit. But yeah, that triangle of Gomez, Milner and Elliott I thought worked really well as a three and pretty much negated Foden.
Just on the French, if there is a weakness in that sort of Liverpool system, is it that it asks a lot of the two central midfielders?
Yeah, I think it does.
I don't really see how that's going to work for them in the long run, especially when your two guys are, well, one of them is Thiago. He's not going to be there for 50% of the matches. So,
and I didn't think he played particularly well yesterday. I thought
no,
Yeah, he was...
Could have been sent off.
Could have been sent off. And I know he slipped, but it was still a pretty bad challenge.
It's horrific.
And there's also that photo. I can't work out exactly when it was.
He was kicking Hal in the nuts.
Yeah.
have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
He's absolutely... He's booting sort him in the nuts from behind. I mean, it's like...
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's a meaty contact.
Right.
Making sure this progression from one Haaland to the next Haaland, making sure that there's not going to be another Haaland in 20 years, going to score 180 goals a season.
On that note, Jonathan, great to have you in studio.
Cheers.
We've just got to make it count. It might be a knob end. Is it too much to ask? In 91st minute, that wins it.
So basically, any chance you train? I think Roy said something under his breath about Johnny or something.
You're always on the treatment deal. Never fuck.
Roy is Roy, isn't he? I'm sure there's lessons to be learned by everybody.
And Harry was just going, Roy, I'm not speaking to you like this. Like, you know, I'm not listening to you.
When I got the sack at Sheffield United, the only guy that spoke to me was Roy Keane. I'll never forget that. And I thought that was a bit of class.
We've got that bit better quality. And we just got to make it count.
He called me
It might be a knob end in 91st minute that wins it.
You wanted to make one final point on Arsenal being somewhat fortunate against Leeds?
Yes, Owen. I think I said something like luck and resilience are not the same thing. You don't want to get them mixed up. And I know it's been a hot button word, you know, to do with Arsenal this season. And I'm not saying their success this season is down to luck. Far from it. Not in the big picture. But since we had that chat, I noticed a headline on Michael Cox's article on The Athletic. Arsenal beat Leeds without playing well, but it was a sign of luck, not resilience. And I just want to say that's quite similar to what I was saying. And I just want to point out, Owen, that I didn't simply copy what Michael Cox had said. We independently arrived at a similar conclusion using similar words. That is, in fact, what happened here. If you can believe it, Owen, do you believe in miracles?
Simon Cox has not copied you. You have not copied Simon.
Simon Cox certainly hasn't copied me, unless he's got a bug somewhere in this studio.
Jonathan Wilson could be the bug.
Wilson
straight onto Cox saying, you know, you better take this line. Yeah, of course I'm not. Michael Cox very much wrote.
Write this down. Look, not resist. Yeah, so all I'm saying is that, you know, Michael Cox, he looked at the same evidence and came to the same conclusion. Again, you know, nobody wants to use offensive language. You know, I try to steer away from causing unnecessary controversy. Things that could incense people. I try to stay away from them. But you know, that's something. That's part of our world today, Owen.
Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Owen.
Thanks so much for listening today. We do hope you'll consider joining the World Service to hear all the coverage of Man United against Spurs on Wednesday night and all the rest of the Premier League football and everything else we'll be doing over the next few days. If you sign up, you will, of course, hear every episode ad-free. You can do it on secondcaptains.com. Second Captains Podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Whose phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The Second Captains
World Service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.